The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
So, there's a fortnight left, and that's not N-I-T-E fortnight as well for all those gamers out there. Two rounds left in the 2018 season, and it's hard to think of a greater scramble in the run home in recent years. We'll dissect that, plus all the big footy news and issues in the Fox Footy podcast, all thanks to the Fox Footy app, which you can download from the App Store and Google Play today, and it will give you all the latest and best news, highlights, scores, and stats. G'day, everyone. I'm Ben Waterworth, and joining me in the podcast bunker this week, after hosting last week very nicely, it has to be said, is Chief SummerSlam reporter Max Lawton. Hello, Maxi.
Hello, Benny. Yes, looking forward to the WWE show.
You got another US junket.
Yeah, they're racking up the frequent fly points. It's very exciting. But can we just start the episode, Tom Morris.
Hello, Thomas. Here, by the
way. Hi, Ben. Hi, Max.
By congratulating Ben on his AFL home and away calling debut on Fox Footy. Fantastic work.
Thank you.
Calling Richmond at Gold Coast. Late notice call up.
Yes.
But excellent by
you. One thing we do on this podcast is we go behind the scenes. And without wanting to be too self-indulgent for you, Ben, I will say that you did a terrific job.
Thank you.
Working with Jared and Jason. Probably my favourite bit was at the very start of the call when the commentary team came up the bottom left and it had your humble name in amongst Lynch, three-time premiership player, Dunstall, four-time premiership player, and Jared Healy, Brownlow medalist. And I was thinking to myself, Ben, you are an esteemed company. Now, you got the call up on Friday night to do this Gold Coast Richmond game.
Yes.
It's fair to say I would not have watched this game had you not been calling. But now I watched
for Gold Coast?
Well, I watched because you were calling. I'm glad I did because Jack Riewoldt kicked 10 goals, 6, and you called it perfectly. Well done.
Thank you. No, it would have been a bit of an interesting experience if Jack hadn't kicked 10. That certainly gave us a storyline. But you're right, got the call up on Friday night about 5 o'clock from the EP, from the executive producer. Because Brendan Speedy does a great job,
yes,
you know, calling a lot
across
of sort of the Northern games. Yeah, incredible. So he'd called an FFA Cup game for Fox Football earlier in the week in ridiculously cold conditions. It was the game where the player had that unfortunate neck injury.
It's taken
some time to get away.
Like Melbourne City, perhaps.
Yes. And so it was a four-hour broadcast in the end, outside and freezing cold, and Speedy was buggered.
His vocal cords were no good.
Yes.
They went the way Jimmy Barnes, did they?
So he made the flight up and just sort of ended up chiming in sort of with, you know, stats and keeping everyone up to date.
You were the lead caller.
So I ended up calling all of it.
Jeez, they chucked you to the Wolves.
It's good fun, though. I had one of those sort of pinch yourself kind of days.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you deserve it, Ben. Well done. And it's great to see you've come back to the humble podcast now, given that you dogged us last week, then you found bigger and better things on Saturday. So it's actually amazing that he's come back, Max.
And we're lucky to have him.
Maxie did a very good job hosting last week.
Max did do a very good job. I really enjoyed it with Sarah and Max. And I've got to say, you've got a lot to live up to today because I think Lordo's doing... We're doing some great work for the Fox Footy
channel. Sarah, unavailable for today's podcast, it has to be said, but... It doesn't mean that it's not going to be a thrilling addition to the podcast.
Let's get to it.
Speaking of thrilling, it is a thrilling run home. You're talking about it off air just beforehand, Tom. You can't remember a run home quite like it.
I think it's time for a bit of honesty. I'll take an honesty tablet and I'll put on the line for you two.
Yes.
I don't really get around the run home until about 3 or 4 weeks left. I sit here and I listen and I'm sure it's got some merit for some people, but I live in the present. But right now and last week, I'm all about the run home, Max, and I can't wait to hear what you've got to say today.
Really sounding like Robbo on AFL 360s. Oh, I don't look at the ladder until round 15.
No, I look at the
ladder. The fact that every Monday night he opens up the paper and looks at the ladder.
Sometimes it's just quite futile to actually go and predict 8 weeks in advance.
Yes. And so when we start the run home, I started at 10 weeks out.
Yeah.
Obviously, my prediction is not going to be correct of the final eight, but you get a sense of who's got an easy draw, who's got a hard draw, and easy draws... We said that Hawthorn had the easiest, and here they are with a chance of top four.
I think we wrote that for a Thursday blog at some point.
I think we did, Thomas.
Yes.
Now, so are you in any way, shape or form surprised by Hawthorn's resurgence up the ladder?
Well, no, because I'm surprised. Are they fourth at the moment?
I believe they are above Collingwood.
Yeah.
Yes, so they're fourth.
I'm surprised they're fourth. But I'm not surprised at all they're well and truly entrenched in the eight. Their draw was so beautiful. And even though they lost to Brisbane, they still managed to get there in really a canter. And they're playing some good footy as well.
It's crazy that I believe the top eight has lost to the bottom six 5 times this season. Two of those were by Hawthorn to Brisbane. in both losses. But and yet the Hawks are up there. What they're doing really well is taking advantage of that draw. You can win as many games as you like, but with as close as it is, you need to build percentage as well.
They did. And they did that against Carlton. Yes. They did it against Fremantle. And then they've had two very close wins against teams in a similar position as them in Essendon and Geelong most recently in the weekend. Yeah. So it's been an impressive past
month. The Hawks. Can they win the flag, Max?
I said a few weeks ago that they could, I think after they beat the Bulldogs.
Mm.
And you'd think they can play well at the MCG, which is obviously the key which we've been talking about for so long. They probably won't get there, never mind actually challenging, because you'd think if every favourite wins from now, it's Richmond v Hawthorn in the qualifying final, the first time ever those clubs have played in a final.
Yes, that would be remarkable.
Extraordinarily. You'd think that Richmond would be, what, 2-3 goal favourites at minimum. But
yeah.
Hawthorn are a chance because they can get there, and you trust them, as we've said so many times.
I do trust them, and I like their system. And what I've got to say about Luke Bruce and Jack Gunston, as a tag team, they're about as good in the AFL, I think, because both of them are four-dimensional players. They can run, mark, kick, and pick the ball up off the ground. So between them, they're extremely dangerous. I'm loving what they're doing.
Real Hardy Boys type tag team.
Hardy Boys, Edge and Christian.
Dudley's.
But honestly, though, besides the brilliance of Gunston and Bruce, the improvement of Sicily, who hasn't even been playing in recent weeks, would Hawthorn be in this position that they are if Alistair Clarkson wasn't coaching them?
No, I don't think so. He's the best coach in the AFL, has been for the last, since their premiership run really started in 2008, probably the best of at least the last 20 years.
It is incredible.
Well, he leads the pack, doesn't he? His system is so good. And I love the way that new players come in, like Warple and Nash, and these relatively unknown, and they just slot in and they find a way to be part of it and play good footy. Something that doesn't really happen at many other clubs.
What was Warple? Pick 45?
Yep, late 40s.
John Falcons captain?
Yes, he was.
He looked impressive.
Ready to play a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Was he? Sort of big inside midfielder.
Warpedo is a great nickname, isn't it?
Yeah.
Reminds me of sort of Pearl Harbor, Japanese submarine type stuff.
Reminds you of? Were you alive back then?
Is that too soon or not?
I would have thought so. Okay. Too soon. So
3-hour movie.
Hawthorn was a big winner from the weekend from a run home perspective. Were there any other sort of big winners from the weekend?
I mean, GWS keep winning as well. Collingwood eventually getting the win after getting a bit of a scare. And Sydney, probably the biggest just because I don't know that a lot of people expected it. If you looked at their last three games, they look very tough. And I was thinking they were going to finish on 12 wins. But getting that win over Melbourne gives them a bit of breathing space. They're not safe yet because of their percentage. But it is going to be tough for them to miss out because you'd think that they battled through that Melbourne game and they looked very well in picking the Demons apart.
Yep.
They could well win one of their last two and that would lock them in for sure. They could still make top four, in fact.
It was. It's been sort of amazing looking at the run home because Sydney is the team that, it's almost an outlier in a way, what they've been able to achieve, because they've surprised a lot of people, and they had the toughest run home. So we talked about Hawthorn having the easiest. Sydney have had the toughest, and yet still this remarkable club finds a way to be in and amongst September action once again.
I feel that them beating Melbourne is Melbourne finding a way to lose, not the opposite.
Right.
I was very impressed with the Swans. As I said, they just picked them apart. The zone defence from Melbourne did not work at all against the Swans. But
the Swans' defence worked beautifully.
Yes, and Lirilea was best on ground, and Isaac Heaney's showing he's one of the top 20 players in the comp, very much so.
Top 10, I reckon.
Top 10.
Yeah,
Robert Wall's caught in probably the best player of the next decade.
Could be the player of the next decade. Yes. Well, he could be. I mean, so could another 20, but he's a star.
Yeah. It was very, very impressive, and his versatility is incredibly important for them. So, I mean, I've been down on the Swans all year, and I think their percentage reflects that, but they did enough and they scored well enough, which was one of the big things that's been their problems in recent weeks against Melbourne.
I'll tell you how to frustrate supporters, Ben and Max.
Yes,
you get the ball 80 metres out
and
you just pop it up and hope for the best.
Against the Sydney Swans of all teams.
And they just feed on that, the Sydney Swans. They sit behind there and Alea drifts across a pack. It was so frustrating to watch this Melbourne-Sydney game, especially the last quarter, just no system with the ball. Mm. Now, Melbourne, I think, and I was watching on the couch last night, and I think Jonathan Brown explained it really well, talking about Jesse Hogan's leading patterns, and he's a very smart player, Jesse Hogan, unfortunately out for the year now. But the way that Melbourne was unable to get what I would like to call cheap goals, you watch Hawthorn, they get the ball 80 metres out, and they hit a target and they kick the goal and everyone moves on. Melbourne having to work so hard for goals, and when it works, it flicks over the back and they run through, but it just rebounded time and time again. It was super frustrating.
Have they had five games this year where they've won the inside 50s by some margin and lost?
Yep. So 100 teams this year have had 10 or more, have had an inside 50 differential of 10 plus in their opposition. So that's 100 times. 84 times that team has won. There's been one draw. And on 15 occasions, there have been losses, and Melbourne occupy five of those 15 losses. for the year. There was against Geelong in round one, Port Adelaide round 14, round 15 against St Kilda, round 18 against Geelong, and then on the weekend against Sydney. All games they probably should have won.
They win one of those games, they make finals.
Yeah.
And now they might not.
They are unbelievably similar to the Melbourne of last year, and it sickens me to say that because up until about a month ago, I thought they were absolutely better. They're actually not.
So here's the thing, though. Despite that, which you would call a dysfunctional forward line, or at least a dysfunctional mid-forward connection.
System.
Yeah. That was the second thing that Simon Goodwin said at his press conference after talking about Alex Johnson, which was very good of him.
Amicable.
Was talking about the disconnect between the midfields and the forward line, and Jesse Hogan copped some of the blame for that on Couch. Despite that disconnect, they're the highest scoring team in the comp. This is how talented they are. Mm. This is how good they can still be with that issue. Yeah. That's why I've been so big on Melbourne all season, because they can still overcome all of that.
Yeah, well, it's like any sportsman or any team with a real technical weakness that it has talent. They can perform to a high level most of the time, especially against weaker opponents. But when the pressure's on against good opponents in a lot of different sports, they fall down. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
So despite what you said then, and numerically how it all adds up for Melbourne to be a very successful team, the thing that a lot of people can't get over is their record against top eight teams, which is still pretty grim
Slightly
viewing.
Misleading, though, isn't it,
Matt? Or is it misleading?
So it's 0-5, and they're 0-7 against the top nine, so they've lost twice to Geelong, who are sitting in ninth. The fact is that Geelong has beaten more top eight teams than Melbourne has played.
Yeah.
Which sort of says it's bad for both teams. Bad for Geelong, the fact that they've had 12 games against the top eight, which is one off the maximum possible for a season, basically.
And the other thing that sort of came out about Melbourne on the Monday was Champion Data's percentage of how likely teams are going to make finals, and it's still very high for the Demons.
So they had it at 95% to make the eight, which I will point out was the exact same percentage they had going into round 23 last year.
Max, I'll tell you one thing about Melbourne, and this is my prediction.
Yes.
And I might be, you can get the audio out in 2 weeks if I'm wrong.
Looking forward to it.
If Melbourne lose to West Coast this weekend, they are not beating the Giants in round 23 to make it. The only way they can make it is if they're winning this weekend against West Coast, which they could do.
Well, you're making the point about sort of mental toughness, they will just fold because of the pressure and all of that stuff.
And also the Giants are good.
Yes, but I think more to the point is they have more of a chance of beating West Coast because West Coast is not as good of a team as GWS.
I agree, I think a
lot of people look at the fixture and say, oh, West Coast over there, oh, they won't win that. Look at West Coast, they're top two. But if you watch that West Coast Port game, both of those teams look crap.
Yeah.
Port Adelaide, that's why I think they're going to miss the eight, because they look really bad. And if they can't score and now they're losing Charlie Dixon, I don't know what they're going to do. Whereas the Eagles should have won that game, and they did in the end thanks to that goal after the siren, but the fact that they needed that much and were so struggling to score, I think Melbourne should go over there and win like they did last year when Tom McDonald had his sort of breakout game.
Yes, I do remember that. Clayton Oliver had a big night. Jack Viney had a big night, but he won't be there. Yes. Just before we move off the D's, though, as you mentioned just then, Jesse Hogan out for the rest of the year. News has just come to hand, you could say, Thomas. Yep. So what does this look like structurally, potentially, for the Demons? Do they flip the magnets? Is Sam Wiedemann just straight in and they put their faith in Sam for the rest of the season and Pedersen holds his spot at the same time?
I think
time?
It probably gives Pedersen another life and gives him another go. I mean, clearly the pressure is on Tom McDonald now. Hogan's an incredibly valuable player, but by the same... And clearly, I want to preface this, clearly Melbourne are better with Jesse Hogan in the team.
Yeah.
But he's a little bit like Buddy in the fact that if he calls for it, he gets it. So he gets run around the back handballs. Sometimes he pushes up too high, as Jonathan Brown was talking about on the couch last night. And sometimes it can be a little bit too Jesse Hogan-centric. So if anything, as we've seen with other teams, Essendon particularly with losing Joe Danaher, it could actually make Melbourne a little bit more of a threat. Look, it's a loss, but I don't think it's really going to change their chances in the next couple of weeks.
They should still win one game.
Tom McDonald needs to kick a bag. Or kick four or five.
I think it would help.
Yeah. He's a very
good
player.
Which he's very capable of doing.
I prefer Tom Donald as a forward than Jesse Hogan.
Yeah, I agree.
If I was going to let one go, I'd let Jesse Hogan go before McDonald at the moment.
Yeah. I think a lot of Demons fans would probably agree with you. So we wrote a piece on foxfooty.com.au that went up on Saturday morning about teams who could least afford to miss the finals. The top three were Geelong, Port Adelaide and Melbourne, and all three teams lost on the weekend and potentially costly. So we've already sort of gone pretty hard on the D's, but the Cats, who obviously lost to Hawthorn, they were dubbed lazy. Well, the midfield was dubbed lazy by Billy Brownless.
I love that. And then Chris Scott said, sorry, who? Billy Brownless?
Yes.
You've got a little jab back at Billy Brownless. Yes. But are they lazy?
So I think Brownie pointed out one piece of footage last night, and it happened to be the most costly footage of Gary Ablett, Sam Menegola, and Cam Guthrie from the defensive 50 stoppage as the Hawks stream forward, losing track of their opponents. Ablett was happened to be man up on Jagger O'Meara at that stoppage, and when O'Meara kicked the match-winning goal, Ablett's on the edge of the centre square. Mm. So missing out there. When you look at the clearance differential numbers, and Geelong being one of the worst clearance teams in the competition, the lazy argument does tend to stack up that little bit more. So you can understand it. Billy said, oh, maybe for the exception of Dangerfield. Now, Billy, by his own admission, is not a hard nut analyst.
No.
But I think his comments have a lot of merit because it is something that, Maxie, a question mark has been put on that Cats midfield despite it being so star-studded right throughout the season.
Yeah, as a Geelong fan, you just feel like they have this ability to suddenly just remember, oh, wait, no, we need to play well in the fourth quarter of so many games. Mm. They just look like rubbish so often and it's so frustrating. As a fan, that game was endlessly frustrating on the weekend. I don't know what exactly the problem is. The Ablett criticism seems a bit harsh to me. He was their best player on the weekend.
3 goals, 30-plus touches.
It was one of his better games since returning to the club. So
I don't know. I sit differently in the Ablett criticism. You can still be critical and say he's playing a good game.
Oh, no, I understand that, but I don't want... For the people who are pinning the blame on him, if that's how they're apportioning it, I think that's incorrect.
Yeah, okay.
But that's all I'd say about that. He was still very impressive.
I like the way that Geelong and Port... Well, I don't like the way it's a good yarn, a good article that Geelong and Port are in a similar boat because they bought high-profile players in. Well, Geelong have bought Ablett in, but Port have bought Rockcliffe, Motlop and Watts in, and yet they are likely to miss or a chance to miss out on the eight. When you bring players in like that, you expect that you'll be locked in for an eight and challenging for a flag. But the thing is with both of those clubs, if they make the eight, I'm not ruling them out of the flag race. That's how tight it is.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And both teams have proven that they can match it with the best.
You can make it to the grand final from eighth this year. You absolutely can.
Right.
Because if Geelong finishes eighth, I'd probably put them ahead of a couple of clubs to make the grand final.
And if Geelong does finish eighth, they'd probably play a Victorian team, probably in that...
Yes, Hawthorn or Collingwood, I think, would be very likely.
Collingwood or the Ds.
Yes, potentially.
So that could be interesting. On Port Adelaide, though, I'm just trying to think of a more costly 10-minute period for a club this year. Mm. Maybe the start of the third quarter, Adelaide v Hawthorn, when James Sisley went bananas early this season.
Or North Melbourne against the Dogs this weekend.
That was pretty big, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But Port Adelaide lost Paddy Ryder first. He came off with a hamstring injury. Then Aidan Johnson gets collected. You know, not a big name, but just another... player goes down, another rotation lost in a crucial game, and then Charlie Dixon goes out with a season-ending injury after fracturing his fibula, I think.
So I believe that's right.
Those three go down. It allows West Coast to sniff in that last quarter and eventually Port Adelaide lose that game, and have they lost their chance at finals?
They haven't lost it entirely because they still have a tough run. Collingwood Essendon's tough, and Essendon...
Collingwood at the MCG.
Yes. Essendon particularly is very hard to predict because they could be out of the running after this week if they lose to Richmond. So
if you didn't know the ladder and you watched Essendon playing at the moment, you'd imagine they're sort of fifth to eighth in the ladder.
Yeah, they're a top eight worthy team right now.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Adelaide leaving their run too late.
It's just shocking how poor they were at the start of this year. Inexcusable.
Yes, and losing to Carlton in retrospect is going to cost them a final spot.
Yeah, unbelievable loss, wasn't it? Mm.
That's real bad from them. But Port Adelaide has had scoring woes for a while, and we were watching Couch last night, and Paul Ruse is talking about how they need to throw some people, throw Robbie Gray forward, throw other people at full forward, just try and change something because they've been bottom four in the league in inside 50s and converting inside 50s into goals.
Scoring in general.
So they've been terrible at that. And the idea that maybe getting Charlie Dixon out will be a boon for them because they'll have to change something.
Mm. Yeah, what are these stats? I've got this stat in front of me here that rounds 17 to 21, Port Adelaide are the lowest scoring team in the comp by some margin. And their match scores are the lowest by some margin.
Right.
So the match scores are averaging 133 between the two teams. So they're clearly trying to shut the game down, Port Adelaide.
Their defence is at least working.
Their defence is working, but they're actually not scoring themselves. I was on their bandwagon about 6 weeks ago. I've got 1 foot off the bandwagon at the moment.
1 foot?
Yeah. I'm just sliding along.
I think I'm off.
Are you?
Yeah, I think I'm off. Yeah. Because I was very bullish about them pre-season.
I was like Ken Hinckley. I really like Hinckley, but... Yeah, it hasn't worked. And they dropped Sam Pepper, so clearly he's not playing some great footy. They might lose Jared Pollock as well to North Melbourne and St Kilda.
Yep.
There's a bit going on.
On the ruse, have they totally blown it?
Yeah, they had the worst loss of the weekend. You know, if they were Melbourne, the criticism would be even more intense. If you can't beat the Western Bulldogs when you're leading by something like 28 points in that game, to potentially give yourselves a final spot. It opened, everything opened up for them on Saturday. Port losing, Geelong losing, Melbourne eventually losing.
Yep, it was.
But and, 28-point lead at halftime.
You're on 11 wins. You've got the Dogs, the Crows over there, which is a tough game, and then the Saints. 13 wins in the bag. Yep. And then you allow three players to have 40 touches and run rampant and Bontebelli to have 34.
But as Gary Lyon pointed out, they were still well up at halftime, even though those players were getting a lot of the ball. They just cooked it in the second half.
It's just bizarre.
They absolutely cooked it, didn't they? But we are more sympathetic towards North Melbourne because we didn't expect them to be in this position.
They've overachieved no matter what.
Yes. Well, we think they've overachieved. They wouldn't say that, but we think they have.
11 wins is 100% overachieving.
I would have guessed they'd have. I don't know, what was their range at the start of the year? I think we did an article with R. Beveridge. Maybe 7-9 or 6-9. We didn't
wins. I think
even less. Maybe
People had them in the wooden spoon contention. More than half of the people when we did our predictions preseason, Fox Footy commentators and us from the website, more than half had the North finishing last.
Yeah,
and now here they are, at least still in contention somewhat. If they beat Adelaide and St Kilda, they can make it.
Yep.
I would think it unlikely for them to beat Adelaide, but you know, you never know.
Despite how interesting this discussion is and analysing the run home is. Is it just a fact that everyone's just playing for second at the moment?
It's sort of why it's more interesting, because you've got to focus on something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Richmond isn't a sure thing to win. I mean, Chris Scott said those comments in his press conference after the Geelong-Richmond game, and a lot of people arced up about it, but I think he was mostly right. Richmond can be beaten by the right team on the right day in the right moments, but it is going to be tough to do it.
Particularly because they're so healthy. So there's a little bit of a blow with Kane Lambert having ankle surgery just ahead of the finals series, and it is a bit... It is a bit of a strange one because they were talking about a mild syndesmosis injury. And normally
2 weeks.
A syndesmosis injury is normally 8 to 10 kind of weeks. So they might have avoided something there. He kept on playing on the weekend as well. So
I think it's very minor. Yeah. And they've got the week off after the home and away season. So he's really got a month to recover. He'll be okay. The reality is the fitter you are, your chances of winning a flag or making the grand final increase dramatically, don't they? And you think, oh, that's just common sense, but it's proven last year by the Tigers. They were the fittest team because they didn't have any injuries and they won the flag. Mm. It just worked out like that. Worked out that way.
And you look at the difference between the Crows this year and last.
Yeah.
People every now and then will say, oh, injuries, it can't be an excuse. No, they definitely are for Adelaide this year.
And I've got very little sympathy for the Crows this year.
Well, we can talk about the Crows a little bit later on. They've copped a bit of a whack. But so Richmond makes it grand final day. Who is your ideal opponent for the Tigers if we are going to see an upset on Grand Final day? Who is the ideal opponent for the neutral supporter who wants to see a good competitive game, maybe an upset, is playing against the Tigers that day?
From a purely aesthetic point of view, I'd love to see a Collingwood-Richmond Grand Final.
I thought you were going to say Brisbane at one stage. That's okay.
Well, I do love the Lions, and I'll speak about them a little bit later. I'm a massive fan.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, if I knew the tune of the French National Anthem, I'd be... Anyway, I think GWS. I really do. Putting the crowd to one side, I think the Giants are coming, and they're coming hard, and I really like what they're doing.
Are you not worried about their injuries? Are they going to reach a tipping point?
I'm worried
at some
about
point?
All teams' injuries. So it's just the best of the worst lot, really. That's all it is at the moment.
I think they'll probably get enough people back that it won't matter once they actually get to September as well. My answer is Melbourne.
The D's.
Because, I mean, if Melbourne makes the grand final, this is the argument I've made for a while now. If they make it, they'll have proven that they can make it.
Yes.
Exactly. If Melbourne win a final, then the momentum that Richmond had last year will be the same as what Melbourne has this year.
And same as the Dogs in 2016.
Exactly the same. That momentum, that intangible swell of support from all over the country and the world will come through Melbourne. But I just don't think at the moment, and it's easy to say now because they lost to Sydney on the weekend, Melbourne are good enough to win a final. And as a result...
They're 100% good enough to win a final.
Well, I don't think they will win a final.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, I think they're good enough to make the grand final, but I don't think they will.
That's why they're incredibly disappointed.
I've got zero trust in that football club at the moment.
But you just said as well that a team can make the grand final from eighth as well?
They can.
From the bottom half?
Well, I'm looking at Geelong and Port. I'm more looking at Geelong in that regard, yeah.
So Geelong and Port are more likely to make the grand final than Melbourne?
I wouldn't say Port. I think Geelong are, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Just because they're more likely to make the eight in it to a degree.
Well, no. But I think Geelong are a better big game team than Melbourne are, and this year proves that.
Tweet at Fox Footy Live if that's a fair or fast call from Tom Morrison. Speaking of fair or fast, it is now time for Australia's favourite segment.
So we're watching the darts in the office, and it was requested 180. I don't know.
Is that some sort of sting?
I'm just kidding. Sure. It was a good sting.
Here we go.
Back from the mic.
Fair or fast? I just wrote this morning in a cafe, actually.
Oh, did you? Which cafe?
It's Sublime Cafe, just in Richmond near Swan Street.
Right.
Yep, after I did a boxing session. Here we go. Very good. That's how bizarre. Ben,
that's Sublime.
The week off between the home and away season and finals should be abolished, fair or farce?
No,
I got him here.
No, I think it's a farce. I think it's a farce. I'm a bit of a fan of the deep breath before the final series. They just need to find something better to put on that weekend,
yes,
or make it a little bit more exciting, or just something. I don't know the solution yet to put on in that bye week, but if they can celebrate that week really, really well, or that weekend really, really well, I'm a huge fan for continuing the pre-finals bye.
Can I give you an opposition to that?
Tom, that's what you do best.
Just give all clubs a week off in about round 14, and that can be that week. So maybe round 16. Let's say round 16.
And then right? have the buys sort of 8-9.
Yeah, exactly right. That's what I would do.
I don't hate that. I was in opposition to this when it came in. I've grown to sort of enjoy it. The build up is okay, and it allows you to have the Thursday night final, which I like as well.
Yeah, I do like that actually.
You know, but
I'm not all against it, but I just think I really think the players deserve two buys. I'm trying to find a way to allow them those two
buys. Funny one. I just wonder if a round 14, round 16 buy, because by that time, a lot of the general footy fans have footy fatigue. So would that either help sort of with a weekend off, maybe help build that momentum back up, or would it just completely, the momentum would kind of
sap up?
I don't think it helps. That's why they do the sort of split buys now.
I don't like the split buys, but I can see why they do it. Rounds 8 and 9, for example, if they did it then. The reality is the players want two buys a lot. They really think they need two buys, and there's this week at the end of the season that no one really knows why it's there anymore.
It was this idea to combat tanking off of like one Ross Lyon decision.
Yeah, anyway.
I think was so stupid.
Not the AFL to make a snap decision.
No.
Like
Jack Stephen and Montagna had 94 disposals between them.
I do remember
that day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was Jason
Blake's last game.
Cozzy.
Yes. And
Milne.
Yeah.
The tip.
Cozzy hit the post and thought it was a goal. Anyway, Max, the footy show will not be on TV in 2019. Oh. Fair or farce?
I don't want Eddie McGuire to call me, so I'm not going to comment.
That's a no, isn't it?
I have no idea what sort of TV programming decisions are being made. I think the front bar is more my type of show.
The footy show should not be on TV in 2019, fair or farce?
I don't enjoy the footy show as a program generally. I don't enjoy Sam Newman's contributions to the discourse of society.
Discourse.
Would be okay. I do not watch it anyway. It does not make much difference to me.
Okay.
But it keeps some people employed.
Well avoided. Nicely done.
You spun that quite well.
I read this morning they're doing a big revamp of the footy show, which is good. I think a revamp is excellent.
Bring Hutchie back.
Great man. Why not? Yes. Yeah. Ben.
Yes.
Your call of Gold Coast versus Richmond was since Hutto's. I see it, but I don't believe it. Call fair or fast?
That is probably the most farcical thing I've ever seen. I've ever heard. In fact.
Okay, we'll move on.
I feel very uncomfortable answering that.
I know you do. Deep down, you love it, Max. Fair or fast? Every club should have an esports team.
I think we've done this one before.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd touch base again.
Ah, fair. Why not? There's no reason not to.
No, but what are the numbers behind it? Is it a profitable...
Oh, not right now, no. Okay. I don't think Adelaide has actually exchanged any money. I think it's more a partnership at the moment with its team legacy. Essendon's team has made the finals.
Excellent.
The Bombers in the League of Legends Oceanic Pro League Gauntlet, which is their finals.
Gauntlet.
There's a chance they could be heading to the World Championships in Korea.
Wow, and you'll be going?
I've junk it if
obviously
Essendon get in touch with me.
North Korea or South Korea?
South this time.
Yeah.
I don't know that North is the right venue.
Thank you for clearing that up,
Max. There's a giant red button in North Korea that might be just in a bit of danger if the wrong hands get on it.
Accidentally hit that instead of a keyboard button.
Ben, Robbo's article on AFLW in the Herald Sun was sexist and an unprovoked attack on female footballers. Fair or farce?
No, that's a farce. Now, I did...
You phrased that,
I did skim through it. I haven't had a good read of it. Yeah. There was some really good commentary. I have to say that Anna Harrington's comment piece during the week was just as good, I have to say. I know I'm slightly biased. But no, I disagree with that. I think overall, when you read the piece, I thought it was reasonably balanced from Robbo. And then when you read the feedback, I think online, I think it was pretty 50-50 from a lot of people. There were some people that went really extreme saying along the lines of what you were saying.
Yeah.
But I think overall, when I looked at the social media feedback, it was reasonably balanced sort of in favour and against Robbo.
Yeah. The problem is the in favour is nowhere near as vehement as the against.
No, that's right. But that's like that for all issues.
It is, yeah.
It's like that for all issues in society.
I think it was a nicely balanced article. I know not every AFLW representative or power broker or footballer agreed with that.
I've spoken to a lot of people. I spoke to a lot of people in AFLW and AFLW reporters as well, and it's pretty split. And a lot of AFLW reporters think that Robbo was on the mark, and some don't. So, yeah.
I'd like to see Robbo on the mark. That's for sure.
That's a good one,
Max. Last one, fair or fast? Essendon should flick Brendan Goddard at the end of the season.
No, I think that's a farce. I think he is a good enough player to keep playing for them in their best 22, and they're trying to win a flag right now. So why would you get rid of him? It's not like a rebuild situation where you need to be eliminating people.
To cross-promote, Thomas,
yes,
would a Gold Coast be an appropriate destination for Brendan Goddard, as flagged by Essendon great Matthew Lloyd on Croc Media's Sports Day?
I think no. Right. I think if Essendon doesn't offer Goddard a new contract, then I don't think anyone else should pick him up. I think he's still valuable at Essendon, but I mean, he's still a good enough player, but I just think there's other elements to his game. My mail is earlier in the year that when they were 1-4, whatever they were, that he was probably not going to be able to play on next year. But I think as they've balanced up the season and potentially some more positivity has been around the club, I think he's likely to get a new contract without being certain.
But we've been saying for a while that Gold Coast's biggest problem is their lack of pointing. You know, and that would really help.
they've got a lot of problems. Beyond pointing.
A good addition to Fair or Fast there, Thomas.
A good addition, thank you.
Yes, which leads us nicely into Gold Coast. So, so my first experience at Metricon Stadium on
Saturday. Did you call the game, did you, Ben?
I did, yes, Thomas. I walked in, and it is a darn soulless place, it has to be said.
Now, would that be the case if the fan base was larger? Or was that just sort of based on the building itself?
No, the building itself and the location of it. Like, for the first time, it really hit me that this is in the middle of nowhere. It actually reminded me, because I did a couple of AFLW games for the GWS Giants early this season. And you have to drive all the way out to Blacktown. Mm. That is really in the middle of nowhere. And there's not a lot of soul about that place either. So you walk into Metricon Stadium, you just don't feel, you obviously feel the physical warmth of the sun. It was 23 degrees.
I love that.
Flawless, and Jack Higgins was wearing zinc on the weekend, and I probably needed to as well.
Definitely.
But there was no sort of footy warmth.
No, I get that, but winning cures all. I've always said that. If the club is winning, then everything else is fine. You'd be saying, what a great boutique stadium this is. Look at all the kids playing on the ground. Mm. I know the crowd's up. No, you would, because
that doesn't cure those issues that Ben's talking about.
No, but it helps those issues, and in the end it does. I mean, listen to Jared Healy on the couch last night.
Did, yes.
And he was very interesting. He said, look around and there's no one there. But then he looks around and he sees all the kids kicking the footy, and he's thinking, that's the future of this club. So I just think if the Gold Coast can get their house in order and actually start winning some games, everything eventually will sort of follow.
And what was interesting to me is you looked at some of the photos on social media before the game, and I was looking at the advertising campaign for Gold Coast that's on Foxtel all the time. It's like, it's the summer holidays. Come up to the Gold Coast and see your team play, Victorians, because it's nice and warm up here.
Yep.
It makes total sense. And then you go out, look out the front of Metricon, and they have the Gold Coast merch and the Richmond merch stands next to each other. Huge line for Richmond, nothing for Gold Coast.
Yes.
Even if you're just getting kids who are Tigers fans interested in footy up there and going to those games, that's still a win. You're still getting people invested in footy. That's the long-term goal of the Suns as a club. So you're still winning in that regard. And I think Jared talking about kick-to-kick afterwards as well?
Which they didn't even the kick-to-kick afterwards, they didn't even put a rope around the centre square. It was just a free-for-all.
One of my favourite things to do as a kid was the second siren went, you run on all the way to the rope, and you almost went on the centre wicket.
Yes.
But then
it was just a big free-for-all. So I agree with that, Maxie. Saturday was actually the perfect example for a Victorian footy fan to fly up to the Gold Coast, escape the horrible weather that it was on Saturday, go to 23-degree weather and watch your team play. Why wouldn't you go watch Richmond play at the moment? 75% of the crowd was Richmond. And so the atmosphere was actually outstanding.
Yeah.
Really good atmosphere. And I think there was 17,000, 18,000 there at the game. So that was the best crowd for the year. But there were a couple of occasions throughout the game where I saw Stephen May just so frustrated and almost to the point of livid with some of the work that was going on defensively. Jack Riewoldt kicked 10 goals and was outstanding, but had so much space. He almost had the Pacific Ocean to himself. There was that much space inside forward 50. And Stephen May was livid, and I'm like, what's Stephen May doing here? He should be at a club where he should be well supported and where his talent is actually really appreciated from an on-field perspective.
Yeah, why would you want to be there?
It's warm.
Yeah, it's a nice place to live.
You don't get to fly up there for the weekend and watch your team play. You have to live there.
Melbourne is a nice nightclub. There's not much else.
Is it?
Yeah, it is actually.
Oh, okay.
No, not nice. I'd say. Nice is the wrong word. Fun.
So it's got a good sort of lead in there, Thomas, to some more player movement kind of chat here on the Fox Footy podcast.
Yeah.
What is happening with Stephen May at this stage?
Well, The short answer is I don't know.
Great.
Stephen May is being chased by a number of clubs. St Kilda tried to get him last year. Collingwood are chasing him clearly because Steve May's old manager is Ned Guy, who's now the list manager at Collingwood. So there's a clear connection there. There's rumours about the Sydney Swans, but there's issues with salary cap. The Swans are vehement in their denial that that May is on their radar, at least this year. But I'd watch this space maybe in 18 to 24 months with them. Look, May is an extremely polished and accomplished media performer.
Is he ever?
Unlike Tom Lynch, who is more shy and reserved and probably isn't as comfortable in front of a camera, May can talk his way out of a rabbit hole. Mm. So if May gets asked, he'll give you an honest answer. Yeah, I might be looking, but I'm comfortable here at the moment, is what he's generally been said. He's signed 2-year deals. I get a sense May will wait unless Gold Coast force his hand and say that you need to sign a 5 or 6 year deal, in which case he might be forced out. But I think he's quite content to give it another year and then assess at the end of next year, because he's a very strong-minded individual who's in no rush to make a call on his future.
Now, was that not something the Suns were sort of talking about, Mark Evans, floating the idea of forcing his hand and putting a contract on the table and saying, sign this or...
That's been floated. Yeah. I'm not sure how seriously, though. I mean, is it really Gold Coast? I mean, Stephen May is well within his rights to wait another year. Yep. That's his contract.
Absolutely is. But also, the Suns now lost a former captain in Gary Ablett. They wanted to know his footy future. They wanted to know Tom Lynch's footy future. Can they afford a third captain to be in that similar situation heading into just a season where he's only got one more year left in his contract?
I can see the benefit for them as well. If you know going into this trade period that he's staying for the long term, that helps you a lot with recruiting this year, does it not?
Absolutely it does. There's so many ramifications here. There's the club's perspective. You completely understand where they're coming from. But May signed a 2-year deal. Mm. He's entitled to say, I signed a 2-year deal. I'll wait for my 2-year deal, then assess. It's a really tough balancing act. All clubs are having to deal with it at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Tom Lynch, any update there, Thomas?
No, I still think Richmond is... But there's always noise about Hawthorn making a late play. Mm. So I've been on Hawthorn for a long time. People are telling me that Richmond are in the box seat, but it's probably something we're not going to know for a while.
And I reckon Jared Lyons is out.
Do you think?
Out the door at the end of the year.
Do you think so? What, via trade?
Yeah, it has to be via trade, I think.
It does. He's under contract.
He's under contract, so it'd have to be via trade. But he was the number one Suns-ranked player between rounds 13 and 19. He's actually, according to the official AFL player ratings, the Suns' best player, and he was dropped for 2 rounds to the NEFL from round 20 to 21.
I can't understand this.
Stuart Dew has made a number of statements at selection this year. Michael Barlow, the biggest one, and I think he's probably retiring at the end of the season. But Jared Lyons,
how was he on the weekend?
It was solid without being outstanding. Like, no Suns player was outstanding on the weekend.
I think Carlton should go and get him. I'm just looking at all his midfielders. He's perfect. He's in that. They want people in that 25 to 27 bracket. He's in that bracket. He's played, 50-odd games. He's been at two clubs, one of them good, one of them not so good.
And he can play. Talk to the champion data boys about Jared Lyons. They froth over him.
Well, everyone's all year has been talking about how Patrick Cripps is being banged up because he's got no help, no bigger body experienced midfielders. Lyons is that player. Yeah. Lyons will help Cripps.
If Lyons is doing what he's doing right now at any other club, the perfect club to recruit him this trade period would be Gold Coast.
Mm. Well, that's right, yeah.
They have him now. This is one of the most baffling things of the entire season for me, the way they've handled him.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way they don't seem to respect his abilities and talent.
Yes. And the numbers stack up that he's a star. So also, Thomas, today for foxfooting.com.au, and you mentioned on the couch last night as well, the St Kilda trade wish list. And almost every single player that's been
in the league is on it
at the moment has been linked to St Kilda in some capacity. So you mentioned five last night. You could probably add Jordan Ruffhead to that list as well, who has been linked. So tell us about the Saints wish list and how important that is for Alan Richardson's coaching future.
Super important. The reality is if Richo coaches next year, they need a better team or better squad or better list than what they have this year for him to keep his job. And if they don't, well, he's probably going to lose his position as coach of the club. So in order to get a better list, they need to target players aggressively. Now, is it bold or is it desperate is the question that I posed.
I think it is
absolutely both. And I don't begrudge them one sec for doing so, Max, because this is the new age we're in. The difference is it's all got out in the media. And probably other clubs are just as ambitious in trying to get players in, but for some reason St Kilda's leaking like a sieve.
I'm worried that St Kilda's going to ruin itself for the next decade by its trade period coming up.
What do you think they're going to do?
So I think the issue is we know that there's some sort of contract issues here with Alan Richardson where he has triggers and
yeah.
games one we're expecting is one of these triggers to get him a longer contract. Mm. The problem when you have that situation is that he is coaching for his own security as the coach of the club, and that's not necessarily in the best interest of the long term of the club. Mm. If they're going all in right now to bring in a bunch of players and trade out all these picks and do all this stuff, they don't have a second round pick anyway to trade.
They don't.
What that could do damage wise, if they don't have a good enough list to then compete, is catastrophic, surely.
The thing that I worry about St Kilda is that they're just so subjective in how they view their club at the moment. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of objectivity about where they see themselves. I don't think they know exactly where they're at, which makes that, as you said, this upcoming off-season period very, very interesting to see what they do. So there's the on the trade list, trade wish list, there's Hanbury, Lysette, Polek, as well as a couple of
Gaff and Menzel.
And Menzel, which you reported and broke yesterday for foxfooty.com.au. What's the likelihood, and Rufford, what's the likelihood of any of those players coming?
Hanbury is the most likely,
right?
Which is bizarre because he's the only one of those players under
contract.
No, under contract.
Under contract, sorry.
But there just seems to be a lot of support for that move. And I'm actually a big fan of it. People are saying, oh, Hanbury won't be able to move in 5 years. Why would you get him a four-year deal with triggers? But my belief is St Kilda is significantly better next year with Hanbury than they are without. And then you deal with what happens 4 years down the track, 4 years down the track. And if he's no good, then he'll retire or you can pay him out or you just deal with it down there. 4 years is a long way away. You need to be better soon. Otherwise, the membership's going to plummet. The sponsors won't come on. And there's commercial realities you need to deal with.
So Hanbury's had a bad year. Sorry, Maxi.
No, that's fine.
The
injury prone.
Injury wise. But what we probably forget is that he's still only 27 years of age.
He's 27.
A lot of us think that he's probably closer to 30, but he's only 27 and he's still got a lot of time up his sleeve. But is he the answer for St Kilda, though?
So he's not quite the perfect recruit because of the way he would fit into that team. But if you looked at St Kilda at the start of this season, you would have said that sort of player is exactly who they should go for to try and bolster their list and get up into the top four.
Bit of leadership.
If they were sitting 8th to 12th, you want to add those players, and that's when you go on that recruiting spree. That's when you do a Port Adelaide or an Essendon and try and get up into that top four and have it work out for you. But not when you're sitting in the bottom four. Not when you've got this list of players who are young but not super young and a few talented players, your Jack Stevens, your Greshams and all of that
Seb
stuff.
Ross, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But
Jack Carlisle.
That can be the core of a team that contends with a flag in a few years' time, but not anytime soon. So why are you recruiting heavily now? It doesn't make any sense for their list profile to do what they're saying they want to do, as has come out in the media.
Well, they've gone to the draft. It hasn't worked. So they're thinking, we can't sell that again because we've tried to sell it the last 5 years.
Have they got a choice, though?
No, because you can't just say, well, it hasn't worked, so we have to do free agency. It's not one or the other. You can go to the draft again. I understand your arguments about selling and commercial realities and stuff, and that's an issue in itself if that's their decision-making. If the football club is making decisions based on the club rather than the football team,
all
that's
clubs
a negative.
Do that. All clubs do that.
But this could be a real negative for them.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of talk as well about the trade wish list to help reinvigorate Richo's coaching career.
Yeah.
What about Richo's coaching contract? So Caroline Wilson on Footy Classified last night talking about Richo contract until the end of 2020, but that year is essentially a trigger, and that trigger will occur if he meets certain performance things
indicators
in 2019, and they would be quite lofty, I think, considering where St Kilda sees themselves at. So is he in some strife heading into next year?
He's in some strife. I've got to back Simon Lethlean, but there's no doubt that St Kilda re-signed him or extended his contract to ease the media pressure.
Yeah.
This was a decision based on external pressures, which is probably the wrong reason to make a call of this magnitude.
I'm trying to think of how many coaching contract extensions have been made to ease the media pressure.
Well, Bolton, in a way, sort of was.
But Buckley last year was Collingwood, like the Sydney Swans defence, absorbed all that pressure as much as they possibly could until after round 23
last year.
Well,
that's Eddie Maguire just going, no, stuff you. We'll do it on our own time.
I like that they backed their own decision there because it worked in the end. They were like, well, Eddie's basically going all in, and if this doesn't work, probably both of them are gone.
I suppose that's what they're going to weigh up. Is Richo the right man going
forward?
Well,
what's going to happen now, I think, is, and it's been made pretty clear that Simon Lethlean's going to change the people around Richo, create a Damien Hardwick type situation. And if that doesn't work, well, they've tried everything.
The problem when comparing them to the Magpies, though, is that we thought for years that Collingwood had the talent to contend, but just weren't getting there.
Yeah, and Tigers as well.
And the Tigers, exactly. St Kilda is not in that situation.
Nope.
Well, if Australia's favourite segment is Fair or Fast, Tom's favourite segment is just talking about the Brisbane Lions each week on the Fox Footy podcast. And you are live boundary side on Saturday night for the big clash between Collingwood and Brisbane. And you would have been mildly impressed by what you saw from the Lions early on in the game.
Yeah, first half, I was really impressed with them. I love the way they go about it. I love Luke
on field and off field.
Yeah, I love Luke Hodge. Came to the bench, and I was sitting down on the bench. He came to the bench. There's a lady sitting on the computer, cutting up stoppages, for lack of a better term. I'm not sure. Doing sort of footy IT type work.
Vision.
Yes.
Hodge goes over to her. She takes off her headset and mouth words to the effect of, "Can I just have a look at something?"
Yeah.
She then rewound the tape she was looking at on the computer. He looked at the stoppage. And he was pointing his finger. He was on the phone to, I presume, Chris Fagan at the time, talking him through what he was seeing. He's actually pointing at the screen while he was talking, put the phone down, went over and spoke to Tom Cutler and gave him advice and pointed back at the computer saying, "I was just looking at this on the computer.
Right.
This is the positioning we should have been." Now, if that is not an example of why all young clubs should have a, call it Jared McVay, Luke Hodge, call it whatever you want, then I don't know what is. That is coaching on the run, and you don't get it unless you have a star like that.
Yep. That's fantastic to see, and it's one of the many reasons we've seen so much success from them, I think, you have to say. That cannot be extricated from the fact that they've been so much better in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
That would make sense, that impact would just pile up on this club.
You can't manufacture that sort of leadership. He has 2001 draft, wasn't he? He's got 17 years of knowledge stored in his system at a successful club, and that is invaluable for those Brisbane players.
They play the Gold Coast Suns this week. How much are they going to beat the Suns by?
I hope 100 points because I love the Lions.
They hope 100 points.
Yeah, I do. I love the Lions, mate. They've won 4 games, but in the rooms after the game, they're extremely accommodating. I like Chris Fagan. They've got a trio of power at the Lions. Noble, Greg Swan is the CEO. Noble's the head of footy. And Chris Fagan. That is an experienced, measured, intelligent trio of power that anyone below them, so players, assistant coaches, are going to be well positioned for the rest of their careers because of the influence of those three.
And you mentioned Hodge as well, that he carries a lot of power, I think, from an on-field playing perspective, and it's a very young group as well.
They did lose the game Saturday night, by the way.
They did. You know, one of the best things about the Lions this year is that they've stayed actually the healthiest club. So when you look best 22, they're actually ranked 18th for games lost to injury to their best 22 this year, whereas Collingwood is ranked first and did a great job of winning on Saturday night. But the Lions, I think they've had so many games put into these young guys this year, this best 22 this year, that'll set them up so well. Just on the Pies, you saw them live firsthand. Are you still a Collingwood believer that they can challenge?
I'm a believer they can challenge, but they need Treloar back, I think.
Yes. I think so.
Which is a big if. I asked Buckley after the game, when is Treloar back? And he was very coy. It won't be before. First week of finals is too early. They'll have to win the first final and maybe bring him back in a prelim, but it's a big risk when you do. But I still think they need that bit of X factor through the midfield.
Did you get some rival TV network airtime during that press conference?
No, that game was a Fox game.
Oh, Fox game. Yeah, that's right.
And none whatsoever. I was happy to sit with my legs crossed and unshaven and just nice and relaxed.
You have to dress up for the Channel 7 games. Disappointing.
That is always an interesting experience, and the Friday night press conference.
And avoid getting your interviews in the rooms interrupted by a certain large commentator.
Yes. Wow. The round 22 tips and cups are always my favourite time of the Fox Footy podcast. We start with Richmond and Essendon on Friday night for the Ty Zantuck Cup. Loyal servant of
We haven't really spoken about Andrew Gaff yet at all. I guess we'll speak about another time.
No.
We'll do the tips and cups, then speak about Gaff.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. Yeah. Who's playing? Essendon and Richmond. I still believe Essendon can win this. I'm tipping Richmond because I'm not brave enough, but I still think Essendon are a sneaky chance.
I can't tell how much Richmond will be not trying because they need one more win to lock up the minor premiership.
You're not suggesting...
Richmond wins.
T-word, right, okay.
No, of course not. I would never suggest such a thing, really.
Collingwood and Port Adelaide for the Matthew Loken Cup, or Loken Cup. I think I always went with Loken back in the day.
Who's playing Port and...
Port and Collingwood.
Are you on the podcast?
Sorry, I'm just thinking who else played for Port. Oh, there's another play for Port. Ronald Loney brothers? Did he play? One of them played for Port, one played for Collingwood.
No, one played for Port and one played for Hawthorn. I think you'll find that was...
Daryl Wakelin.
Oh, no, Daryl Wakelin, yes.
Yeah. Oh, is he St Kilda and Port? Anyway.
No, because Daryl played for Port Adelaide, Shane played for Collingwood.
This could just be the Magpies Cup as well.
Sorry, I'll get with the times. Who's playing? Port and Collingwood.
Yes.
I don't know.
Lips.
Ryan Loney.
Yeah, Jack's uncle he is.
Yes.
Collingwood.
Welcome to the new podcast where we just name obscure AFL players.
That is a podcast. Collingwood podcast MCG. Itself.
It's a Facebook page that people love. Yes. Collingwood should win this. Port might be done.
Geelong and Fremantle down in GMHBA Stadium for the Marcus Drum Cup. Oh, Marcus never unfortunately played a game for Geelong, though.
Damien.
Yes, son of.
Member for Wallen? No, that's not right.
Yeah. Oh, well, yes, he was a. He's still quite prominent in the political.
I think he's in federal parliament now, is he not?
I think he was. He was the sports minister for a while. He helped set up the Junction Oval.
Good to know.
Geelong.
If they don't win, then they don't deserve to play finals anyway.
Huge game this weekend. GWS taking on the Swans. This is for the Jed Lamb Cup, who will be running around for Carlton the day after. But yeah. Obviously played for both clubs there. Yes. This has turned into a rib snorter.
Who are you tipping here, Maxie?
GWS, 100%.
Okay, so am I.
Still don't believe in Sydney.
No, right. I can't. Sydney, like South Melbourne, they're better away. They're better in Victoria. Yeah, they actually
true.
Are.
They have been better away.
Yes,
this season.
Yeah. I like the Giants.
And this is away because it's spotless.
That's right.
So for the Michael Riscatelli Cup, Gold Coast and Brisbane, you tip Brisbane by. Well, you said that you hoped Brisbane would win by 100, but 10 goals.
I'm tipping with my heart. I just really like the Lions.
Well, then also by 10 goals and a behind.
Okay, no worries.
Did you say off air beforehand that you're seriously contemplating switching allegiances to the Brisbane Lions?
No, I'm not. I'm seriously contemplating buying a Brisbane membership out of loyalty because I really like them next year.
That would be very loyal of you, Thomas. St Kilda and Hawthorne for the Peter Spider Everett Cup.
My favourite Gold Coast radio personality.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Did you see any billboards for him up there?
I didn't
was
see
he on Hot Tomato?
No, I didn't see any.
Shane Savage, Ben McAvoy.
Yes, there's a few. Ones. Yes. Yeah. Going for obscurity.
Probably though. Too soon, yeah. Yeah, Peter Everett's real obscure. 300 games.
Hawthorn.
Yeah. Is this for the Silk Miller Cup?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. For the Blue Ribbon Foundation, which does magnificent work.
An actual cup.
Carlton and the Western Bulldogs for the Jason Tutt Cup.
It's also, an irrelevant
also,
game.
Also an actual cup.
It's actually an irrelevant game, isn't it?
Well, this is one of the games that if the trial rule changes would have been executed in the last part of the year, this game would have been perfect for
Tom, this is a great game. I can't wait to tune into Fox Footy at 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoon to watch this one. It'll be a cracker with a great team of Bulldogs. Carlton's bad. Bulldogs.
Bulldogs.
Yes, I think the Bulldogs will win that one. We have to give credit. The Dogs were very good in that third quarter on the weekend.
They were the worst second-half team in the league for a while, and now they've been the best team in first quarters for two straight weeks.
Incredible.
Third quarters, right.
West Coast and Melbourne in Perth for the Philip Reid Cup on Sunday afternoon.
Philip Reid. Yes. That is a name I haven't heard for a while. Could have gone Stephen Armstrong as well.
Oh,
that's right.
Yes.
Premiership player.
Premiership player for the Eagles.
Absolutely remarkable that he's a premiership player, number two.
Like Mark Blake.
Oh, wow, that's a whack to Mark Blake. In fact, Mark Blake wore the sunnies after the 2011 Grand Final.
Yes, he did too.
And he was just upset. It was almost raining and he was wearing sunnies. Who am I tipping here? This is a really tough game to tip.
This is huge for the D's.
I think Melbourne, just because I think they just have to win.
Right. They have to win because they're not going to beat GWS in round 23.
They're not.
As you said. And they should be the better team. They are a better team on paper than West Coast right now. A West Coast team without Gaff, without Natanui, and without Kennedy, who is not playing this week. Mm. They really should win. Like, it's not about mental strength or anything. They're just a better team. Why wouldn't you win?
Yep.
Unless you're a useless club.
The round that concludes with Adelaide and North Melbourne.
Big game for North.
Brad Moran Cup.
Yeah. Similar reason to Melbourne is why I'm tipping North Melbourne, just because they have to win.
Yep.
I still think Adelaide's the better team.
Okay.
Gaff?
Yes, so Andrew Gaff.
Bury the lead, haven't we?
That. Yes, we have. Sorry. Copped the 8-week suspension since we last conversed on the Fox Footy podcast. What's his movements for between now and the start of October?
So Andrew Gaff, my understanding is he's in Melbourne at the moment, and there will be no contract discussions or bids or anything entertained for at least another week, because it would have clearly looked bad if he came to Melbourne to face the tribunal, received an 8-week ban, and then was immediately entertaining offers from rival clubs. So he's just having a week or two to assess everything. He's with his family, he's with his friends down here. And then he'll go back to West Coast and he'll be part of the club. He'll be around the club as any other injured or suspended player would be. But I think it's right just to give him a couple of weeks off. There's no doubt offers will come thick and fast. But at the moment, he's just spending some time in Melbourne.
Do you think he'll want to be around the club at that stage?
I think so. They're his mates. They've spent so much time together. I think it's best if he is around the club at the moment. unless he decides to leave, in which case you might have a Tom Lynch situation where they just say, sorry, mate, we don't need you anymore.
There was some fascinating discussion in the aftermath of that 8-week suspension around what he might do. And Paul Connor's obviously very quick on Essie in the morning after to hose down suggestions that he'd be meeting clubs straight away. But will the suspension have any factor at all in his footy future decision?
I don't know. It would for me. I think he was... If I'm him, I'm probably leaving. And now
you wrote about this on Thursday for the blog.
Yeah, if I'm him, I'm probably leaving before the suspension, and after the suspension, I'm definitely leaving. I'm out. There's an argument that West Coast, he owes West Coast something. I don't agree with that. He's been there for 8-9 years. He's played some unbelievable footy. Yep.
Consistently played as well. So durable for the club.
This was a blip, a very large blip on an otherwise clean radar. And as a result, I don't think he owes West Coast anything aside from an honest answer as soon as possible.
What do you think will happen? Do you think he will stay in Perth?
It's a genuine 50-50.
Right.
Yeah, if I was going to lead anyway, it would be to him leaving, but it's not conclusive
either
way.
And the D's would be the...
D's and North, yeah.
North?
Yeah. North offering a lot. St Kilda's offering a lot, but I don't think he's going to go to the Saints. I think the D's are well-positioned to get him if he decides to leave.
Surely if you're going to leave a club that is clearly in the premiership window, you want to go to another successful club right now. And as funny as that sounds, that would be Melbourne of those options.
I tend to agree, but if North finished 10th and Melbourne 9th, there's not a lot between them.
So, last one on this. North would... Well, I think they'll still want Josh Kelly, and Kelly's still uncontracted beyond the end of 2019. Mm. If you had a choice between making a play for Gaff at the end of this season or making a play, maybe taking the risk, making a play for Kelly at the end of 2019 season.
Kelly.
Is Kelly the obvious choice?
Oh, I'd take Kelly over Gaff. I'd take Kelly almost over anyone in the competition. I'd take Kelly over Tom Lynch. I'd take Kelly over Steve May. I'd take Kelly almost over anyone. I think he's an absolute superstar that's been just hampered a little bit by a couple of injuries. But he could win the Brownlow next year, Josh Kelly.
Yeah. The timeline almost allows you to do both, though. You can go for Gaff this year, and then if that doesn't work, well, you've got next year to try and get Kelly again.
There you are. Thomas put under the grill. Normally on the opposite end.
Normally I'm wearing a helmet.
Yep. Barbecue stopper.
Yes.
Thanks.
No, thanks for coming along, Thomas. Thanks, Max, for your time on the Fox
You're
Footy
welcome.
Podcast.
It's weird we finish not with a tips or cups.
But you won't be here this time next week because you'll be in the States.
Well, technically I'll be on a plane, but yes, I will have been witnessing WWE SummerSlam, Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns in the main event for the infinitieth time.
Hell in the Cell or Elimination Chamber?
I believe just a standard sort of match, standard. But who knows?
No holds barred.
Lesnar potentially to UFC or what do we...
You're always a bit of a TLC kind of fan, tables, ladders and chairs kind of operator.
TLC, I was thinking of TLC, what's that song? Don't go chasing water... That's a shocking end to the podcast. Sorry.
And we'll end it there.
I stopped up earlier.
Keep looking back to foxfooty.com.au.